You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I am your host, Adam Miller, and today we're going to be talking about a very, a topic that we don't often discuss here on the radio broadcast. I'm curious, for all of our listeners, a raise of hands, how many of you are fasting? Well, it's probably a good thing that I can't see you on the radio because you're not supposed to talk about fasting. That's the first rule about fasting. You don't talk about fasting, or at least that's what we come to think about the subject. Well, maybe our guest today will give us a little bit of insight about the subject of fasting and what is approvable and what is not approvable. We're joined by Dave Mathis, who is the author of a really great book on the subject, the habits of developing the habits of God. It's called Habits of Grace. And he's also the author of a great blog post that talks about fasting here. Dave, thank you so much for being a part of the many voices for that one message.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me here.
Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about fasting? First and foremost, it's a subject that we don't talk about very often. So it's something that I think is going to have a framework for our listeners.
Yeah, so fasting, to begin with, is typically we are talking about going without food for a specific period in light of some spiritual purpose. Fasting doesn't have to be going without food. You can fast from other good things, and these are fasting from God's good gifts. So underneath the basis of fasting is a doctrine of creation, and that God created this world good. He created these things for us, like food and family and life and the world in so many different ways, to be his good gifts to us, to show us his nature, to be an expression of his fatherly love and care. And yet in fasting, for some spiritual purpose, we would forego or abstain from certain good gifts for some period to seek a greater spiritual purpose. And a very important thing to say about fasting is fasting is not simply going without food. And that could just be some kind of diet, trying to lower your calorie intake to just miss lunch. But fasting is missing lunch or not having dessert, or whatever it might be, whatever aspect of fasting it would be, is doing that for some spiritual purpose, to ask God for something, to engage our hearts in a certain way, to cultivate holy affections for him. And so that's a big part of fasting that we need to reckon with, is the spiritual purpose of it.
Now, it's something we all know about, yet it's something we don't talk very much about. And that's partly due to the fact that you're not supposed to announce when you're fasting. So David, are you fasting right now?
Well, in talking, I see the question you're asking there, trying to set me up as whether to admit it or not. To talk about fasting, there are various aspects of it. So Jesus' encouragement in the Sermon on the Mount that when you fast, don't let everybody know so that your reward in heaven will be great. Those who let others know about their fasting, they have their reward in full. You do it before your Father in private so that your reward in heaven will be great. Amen. Absolutely. We should mind that and be very careful of it. Answering someone's question honestly is different than going out and kind of proactively proclaiming it. So if a friend comes to me and say, "Are you fasting today?" Then I need not lie to them. I could tell them that. That's a very different thing than me making kind of a big hullabaloo about it online or wherever else I would go, or ringing a bell or sackcloth and ashes to let everybody know I'm fasting. There's also a corporate dynamic to fasting. There's corporate fasts in the Bible. And the nature of a corporate fast is that we're doing this together, so you know about it. So strictly, to think of fasting strictly in terms of nobody knowing about it is probably not the most helpful thing. Behind it is not making fasting an occasion just for you getting people's esteem and respect right now in the situation. If a church calls itself to fast together, then you're going to know who's fasting now. We called to fast together. Another aspect, too, of fasting that we should consider is we should consider others. God would not have us fast in such a way that is inconsiderate or unloving to others. So an aspect of fasting we should always consider is, how will this affect those I'm doing life with? If I'm fasting today at lunch and I have a lunch appointment with some people who are expecting me to eat with them, how does that affect them? Do I let them know ahead of time? How do I consider them? If I'm going to fast at lunch, do I plan ahead so I don't put somebody else in an inconvenient or awkward position? Thinking about love, this is big, with one's own family or roommates, with your spouse, with your children. How are you loving others through your fast? instead of inconveniencing them by it.
What is the reason for fasting? I mean, other than what seems to be co-opted by our society and the big popular diets that involve fasting, it's not a health issue. There's a spiritual component to it, but how do we connect the spiritual component to something that seems very, very physical?
Well, the maybe to explain kind of how the physical relates to the spiritual, that dynamic in fasting, is there are physical effects when we go without physical nourishment. So the unpleasant rumbling, maybe even small sense of fire that we feel in our belly, or just the sense of being uneasy. Food is such a medicator for so many of us. You know, how many things in our souls do we not pay attention to, or we just cover over by eating the next meal and feeling that physical sense of being settled from food, and we pass right over the emotional dimensions of that. So in fasting, what we're doing is we're embracing a kind of pain, typically low-grade pain, although its effects on us can be more significant than we think. It may seem like a very easy thing to fast, and then once you get into to noon and 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock and 3 p.m., you see how much going without food can affect your temperament and your perspective on life and so many of those things. And so the physical dynamic there of going without, feeling that pain, feeling that angst, we want to turn that spiritually. So to bend the fast, so to speak, toward God. And one way John Piper talks about it in his very helpful book called A Hunger for God, he says, when we fast, we say, this much, oh God, I want more of you. And one way to talk about our fasting is that in the absence that we're willing to go without food, something that is so basic, whether you eat, whether you drink, whatever you do all the glory of God. It's a very basic part of life. We abstain from something very basic to say, God, I want more of you. I want to seek your face for this particular prayer request, for a sense of softness and spiritual sensitivity in my life, for you to be glorified in our church, in our city, at my job, on our block, whatever that request would be. There's a kind of intensification that happens through fasting. And hopefully the pinnacle of that intensification is saying, God, I want more of you. I want more of your son, Jesus. I want to know you better. I want to enjoy you more. And that is the kind of the climactic point of fasting. And one way I talk about it in the book Habits of Grace is to talk about sharpening our affections. So sharpening the desires of our hearts. It is very easy for those desires. Constantly, those desires are being dulled by various aspects of life in the world, and chiefly by our own sin and the sin of others around us, and temptations from the devil, whatever that would be. Our affections for God are being constantly dulled. There's a battle going on for our hearts. And fasting is a tool in the battle to sharpen our holy affections, not merely to go without food, but in going without food, to bend that longing, that hunger, that ache Godward, and say, this much, oh God, I want you. I want Jesus. I want your help. I want more of you in my life.
Is there a difference with the physical aspect of fasting and some other practices that are about physically hurting oneself in order to feel more spiritual or in order to punish ourselves? That we're not talking about a sense of punishment that we feel is warranted for our actions. This is not what this is all about, is it?
Absolutely. I'm not talking about a kind of penance in any way. This is not a fasting to try to make up the gap in even the smallest of sense for anything we've done wrong. It's crying out to God to say, God, I want to know you more. I want to enjoy you more. I want to ask that you would attend to this particular prayer request, this special desire that I have for the salvation of a friend or for your movement on our block or this season in our church. Would you grant us wisdom in terms of the direction to go and your leading in our church? Those are the kind of things we're asking God for more of him, and in no way trying to be penitent toward him or make up or punish ourselves for any way for what we've done wrong.
Jesus fasted in Matthew chapter 4. And if fasting is really something that is tying us to this world, as you say here in your book and your article, that fasting is something that's tied to this world, what was Jesus doing if he was so otherworldly?
Well, Jesus is fully God and fully man. So in the person of Jesus, in the eternal Son of God, the God himself became fully man. And so he entered into this world. He was fully human in his mind, in his affections, in his body, in his environment, in his acquaintances. I mean, it is an amazing thing to think about God himself becoming fully man, not seeming to be man, but being fully man all the way down to all the details minus our sin. And so the fact that Jesus would fast is very fitting for us as fellow humans that we would fast. And the fact that fasting for Jesus was not a response to any sin. There's no sin in the God-man. And so he didn't fast because he had sin. He fasted in preparing himself for the ministry he was about to go in a way of crying out to God, I want more of you, God. Jesus, he was never sinful or never disobedient, but he did grow. He matured. Luke's gospel talks about he grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. And Hebrews 5:8 talks about he learned obedience through what he suffered. Now, he never was disobedient, but there's a difference between having obedience and having not obeyed yet, which is distinct from having disobeyed. And so Jesus learned obedience through what he suffered. And some of that, at least at the front end of his ministry, was going through that 40-day fast, which ends up being a kind of supernatural fast. It's not the kind of fast 40 days without any food, without any water. That would be a supernatural thing for God to carry that out. I don't think that we should be doing that. That was an unusual situation for the Son of God. But in choosing that path, the path of pain, so to speak, that fasting is, he was preparing himself. He was going through a kind of maturity to ready himself for ministry and for the Spirit's leading and guidance upon his life and ministry.
It is interesting in the context of Jesus fasting. There's so many very deep biblical principles that we could draw from that text in Matthew 4. But one of the things that I think is really remarkable, and I think John Piper even brings this out, and having worked with John Piper so closely as the executive director there at editor there at Desiring God, I think that you'd probably agree with this, that there's something significant about the fasting where he became so weak to be able to become strong to face the temptation of Satan in the wilderness. To have that weakness going into that, knowing that that was what he was about to face, is kind of the paradox of our life, to rely not on our physical nature, our physical strength, but on what Christ has given us, correct?
Sounds good.
Well, I want to go a little bit deeper with you in the context of fasting when it comes to the aspect of what is drawn out of it. What eventually comes out of our time spent in fasting, because it isn't an area that causes weakness to develop in us. Physical weakness.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's so many things that we could hope to get out of fasting, depending on what the occasion is. It's very important that fasting isn't something just to do generally, but to have a specific spiritual purpose with it. So, for instance, if we as pastors, as we are in my local church right now, we're facing a difficult kind of decision ahead of us as a church, for us to fast, specifically in light of, God, would you give us wisdom for this decision? We don't want to just make, this is an unusual decision ahead of us. We don't want to make this decision in the flesh. We don't want to do this just in our own natural machinations. Like, we want to be led by you in this particular juncture that feels special to us. This is an unusual kind of decision, and we want your leading and guidance in it. And we're going to fast together as a team and ask that God would give us clarity. I've been through very distinct seasons like that with fellow pastors and fellow elders, where something before us as a decision was not the normal order of business. And so we took a step back and we said, It seemed like a real critical juncture in the life of our church and in the life of our work together as pastors. And so we took a step back and said, let's fast together and let's ask for God's guidance and wisdom and for his clear leading for us as a plurality, as a team, in this fork in the road that we're coming up on. So that could be the spiritual purpose for fasting. You know, maybe you set up a regular fast where your spiritual purpose is to remind yourself and ready your heart for the second coming of Christ. So at Bethlehem Baptist, where I was in church there for 12 years, an elder for 6 years, we did a once-a-month fast. It was the first Tuesday of each month, called it First Tuesday Fast, and we came together as a staff, and we would fast for the second coming of Christ. Like, we don't want our hearts to get dull to Jesus' second coming. We want to live in light of his second coming. We want to ask that he would hasten it. We want to live our lives in view of it. And so we want to fast in view of his second coming. And so our hope in that fast was, first, that Jesus would come as soon as possible. We want him to come back. We want to see him face to face. That's what we're longing for. And we want to be the kind of people, until he comes, that are ready for him to come, so that when he comes, we're not caught off guard, that we're ready for his second coming. That may be a kind of fast. Another one may be detecting a pattern of lethargy, spiritual lethargy in your life, where you're just feel like, I have not been sharp spiritually, and I want more of God. I don't want to live in this fog. God, would you renew my heart? Would you sharpen my affections for you? And to have a fast, or however long that would be, if to miss a lunch or miss a dinner or do 48 hours or 3 days even with liquid, something like that, to ask God that he would to jumpstart your heart, so to speak. So really what we're looking to be accomplished in fast, it's like a prayer. Fasting goes together with prayer. In the book Habits of Grace, I mentioned fasting in the section on prayer. There's three sections to the book. The first one is about God's word. Second one is about prayer. The third section is about fellowship. Those are my way to break down the Christian life, or the spiritual disciplines or habits of grace, in the three categories: hearing God's voice, having his ear in prayer, belonging to his body in the fellowship of local church. And fasting is located with prayer because fasting is a kind of prayer intensifier. We don't just kind of go off and fast just for the fun of it. We have a particular prayer request, and fasting is an intensifier that would accompany that request and would say, this much, oh God, I want more of you related to this area of my life. And so fasting becomes a kind of a help. Almost, you could even call it like a rocket booster. You have a particular request. It feels like a special request. This is not out of the ordinary. This is a special request, and fasting is a tool God gives us to intensify our requests of him.
What should one do with the time and the money resources that people are saving when they're fasting? There's obviously something, you know, you're not spending money on the food, you're cutting out maybe something else of your life, so you're saving some money, you're saving some time. What should people do with those extra resources?
I have no idea. I never thought of it that way. that would add up. If somebody did a 40-day fast, you know, 40 days of juice and no sustenance other than juice those 40 days, you probably do end up saving a lot of money. When I just miss lunch or miss dinner, even if that were a couple of days, it's been a while since I've done a fast that's more than a meal or more than 24 hours. I guess that does add up at that point. You could consider maybe God would be leading you to do something in particular with that, other than just save a few dollars for your eating out budget or whatever that would be. I don't have any should or ought that I would tell people what they should or ought to do with that money. I would leave that up to their conscience and their discussion with their spouse or roommates, whoever they do finances with. But that's worth something to consider.
In the time leading up to Easter and the Good Friday, a lot of people will take these weeks to cut stuff out of their life, whether it's sacrificing television or coffee. A lot of people will sacrifice something. Is that a part of this idea of fasting? Can it be more than just food, and can it include a multiplicity of things?
Absolutely, it can be more than food. It can be any of God's good gifts that we abstain from for season. Even 1 Corinthians 7 talks about sex in the context of marriage, and that we would abstain from that at a particular time for the sake of prayer. That's a kind of prayer-accompanied abstinence, which is what fasting is. So television, movies, Netflix, coffee, those would be great candidates for fasting. And again, let me emphasize the spiritual purpose of it. It's not just going without food because I want to lose weight. And it's not just going without coffee because I don't want my body to be dependent on caffeine. It's going beyond just the abstinence of something to a positive spiritual purpose. And so, for instance, as people would, quote-unquote, give something up for Lent, those the 40 days that lead up to Easter, which traditionally the church has honored as kind of a season of preparation for Good Friday and Holy Saturday and Easter Sunday. The reason somebody might give up something during that period is because you're looking forward to that special celebration of Easter. It's not that the church should punish itself for this season because of all that Jesus went through for us on the cross. It's that we're looking forward to the celebration of what he accomplished for us on the worst day in the history of the world. Like, we call it Good Friday. It was the worst day in the history of the world. There has never been an act more evil in the history of the world than for man to put to death the Son of God on a cross. It was horrible. And we call it Good Friday because of what he was accomplishing for us. And he rose again on Easter Sunday. So we look forward to Easter, to what he accomplishes for us in his sacrificial life and death, and rising for us in life that will not end, so that we can be with him forever. And so in seeing that special celebration coming, this once a year celebration of Easter that we have just taken up in history to do this. There's no biblical command, make sure you celebrate Easter every March or April. There's no command in the New Testament like that. Something that the church has taken up. And if we're going to do that, it's going to be this special celebration, then abstaining from something as we prepare ourselves for this coming celebration is a fitting thing. And so I'd encourage people, if they want to consider doing that, do that by all means. It would be your own choice to make. There's no law, there's no new covenant regulation saying that you need to deny yourself some good gift of God's during the quote-unquote Easter season to get ready for Easter. But that would be a very good thing to do. And part of the motivation in that, you'd be saying, oh, I'm looking forward to Easter. I'm so thankful for who Jesus is, what he's accomplished. I want my soul to be sensitive to who he is. I'm asking God in this season to sharpen my affections, show me more of himself. I want to enjoy him more, and I want to celebrate all the more on Easter Sunday. And in readying myself for that celebration, for that great reception of grace that I'm going to mark on Easter Sunday, I'll go without this as a way of preparing my soul, asking God to do something special in this season as we lead up to Easter.
I want to talk a little more personally about what you've seen as a result of fasting. You've obviously written about it in your book, Habits of Grace, and to talk about something that is very intimate in that regard, something that you have had to struggle through on your own and come to on a theological understanding, but also a personal understanding of that. What has that taught you in your spiritual walk?
What it's taught me is that I want to make use of the full range of biblical options for accessing, receiving, and enjoying God through the channels that he gives us. So fasting is a biblically appointed means of God's grace. It's not something that anybody just came up with off on the side apart from biblical revelation. Throughout the Bible, God has instituted fasts through his prophets, through Jesus himself, through the words of Jesus when he talks about his disciples will fast. When the bridegroom is taken away from him, then they will fast. So Jesus makes promises there in the Gospels about his church being a fasting people, and you see it unfold in the book of Acts. As they come to these critical junctures in the advance of the gospel, the community rallies together and they fast. So part of the gospel advance that happens in the book of Acts is tied to fasting. So we see not only fasting in Jesus' life, but the life of the fledgling church. And so because of that, I want to make use of the Bible's, God's own appointed means for living a life that is dependent on Him in light of His grace. And fasting is one of those means that is biblically appointed to follow after Him. The Christian life, it's not like we receive a package of grace at conversion, and we kind of just nibble on that thing and make sure we ration it out for the rest of the Christian life. I mean, all of the Christian life is an ongoing reception of God's grace. And the main ways that He reveals to us that He does that is through His Word, through making our requests of Him, conversing with Him, requesting things of Him in what we call prayer, and then doing so in community, in the body of His people. In the New Testament, that's called the church. And we talk about it in terms of fellowship, having fellows in the faith. And an aspect of prayer, a special tool that He gives us to accompany prayer, is this tool of fasting. And so I don't want to ask minimalist questions in my Christian life, like how little Bible can I get and still be a follower of Jesus? You know, how little of God's Word can be in my life and I still have saving faith? Those aren't the questions I'm asking. The questions I'm asking are maximalist questions. How can I know God more? How can I enjoy His Son Jesus more? How can I live more in the power of His Spirit? And so accessing God's own self through His Word and having His ear through prayer and belonging to His body, and then fasting being an aspect of prayer, of making our requests made known to God. These are the means of the Christian life, and fasting is one of those. I want to integrate that into my life.
It makes me think of Philippians 3 and what Paul says, that I might know more of His suffering, more of the fellowship of His suffering. This is something that we, you know, we do prefer the minimalist questions: how little can I get to get by, or how much do I have to do in order to get the most return of our investment? But this is something that we're thinking about in the context of what Christ has already provided for us and the great beauty of the stores of heaven that He has shared with us through these means of grace.
That's right. Yeah, one thing I can't tell you or anyone listening is how often you should fast. I can't tell you that it should be at certain rhythms, but it should be weekly or monthly or whatever that would be. However, I can tell you this. If there is no pattern of fasting in your Christian life, then that's not up to speed with how Jesus talks about His church. He talks about His followers as those who will fast. He doesn't specify how often, but He says that His followers are those who will fast. When the bridegroom's taken from them, then they will fast. And He says to His disciples in the Sermon on the Mount, when you fast. He assumes they're fasting, not if you fast, but when you fast. And so we should, if we're not having any pattern of fasting, it would be worth considering how that might happen. And I would encourage you to, if you would say right now you're listening to, oh, I don't have any fasting. I've got no plans to fast. There's no normal way in which I would fast. I'm not part of a body of people that from time to time do any kind of fast together. My advice would be, hey, why don't you make a plan today? Maybe look at your calendar and see, when can I set aside a meal that wouldn't be unloving or inconvenient to others, and I could take that time and take up a spiritual purpose. And maybe it's just the Philippians 3 text you mentioned. I want to know the surpassing value of Christ Jesus, my Lord. And I'm going to take up Philippians 3:8 as my text, and I want to spend that time over lunch. Instead of eating, I'll spend 20 minutes or half an hour reading that text, meditating on that text, praying for that, and then and asking God for that to be more real in my life. I'd say that may be one action step you could take away from listening to this interview.
We've been talking with David Mathis about his book, Habits of Grace, Enjoying Jesus Through the Spiritual Disciplines, and we've been talking about fasting, and hopefully we can encourage you to understand the biblical principle of fasting to make it a part of your greater maximizing of the grace that God has in store for you as somebody who He has given His only Son for, to be able to join in Him with Him in the joy and the fellowship of His suffering. So, David, again, thank you so much for being a part of the Many Voices for that one message.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Adam.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.